Hello, and welcome to On the Marie Curie Couch, the podcast that aims to break down taboos and start open, honest conversations about death and dying. I'm Jason Davidson. I'm a social worker by profession, and I've worked in palliative care, hospice care, and bereavement support services for more than a decade. Each episode, we'll be speaking to a well-known guest to find out about how they feel about their own mortality and how their personal experience of bereavement has shaped the way they live their life. Today, I'm on the Marie Curie couch with Tayshan Hayden-Smith. Tayshan is a TV presenter, social and environmental activist, and footballer. He founded Grow to Know, a non-profit focused on empowering young people through horticulture. He's also a presenter and designer on BBC's Your Garden Made Perfect. He started the Grenfell Garden of Peace by transforming the green spaces surrounding Grenfell Tower. Tayshan's first book, Small Space Revolution, Planting Seeds of Change in Your Community, is out in April. Tayshan was born and raised in West London, still lives in London, and has two children. Tayshan Hayden-Smith, welcome to the Marie Curie Couch.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
How are you?
I'm good. I mean, I'm one for being quite real about how I feel. I mean, I feel good on the surface, but I'm very busy and very overstretched and overwhelmed in many ways, but I'm okay. I'm good.
Well, we really appreciate your time today. And I'm going to dive straight in, Tayshan, and ask if you can tell me about a significant bereavement that you've experienced in your life.
Yeah, I mean, my mum, who was my hero and my inspiration, and, you know, there were so many beautiful moments that I shared with my mum. My mum passed in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic, not as a result of the pandemic or as a result of COVID-19, but I think it had a part to play. She was quite scared. My mum was terminally ill, and she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2011, and she was given 3 months to live in 2011, and she made a promise to us. She was a single mother of 4 of us. We lived in a council house in Ladbroke Grove, and you know, my mum was a big lover of life, you know, saw the beauty in everything. And she made a promise to us. I'm the eldest of the 4 of us. And at the time, we were all under the age of 18. So if anything was to happen to mum, we would all most likely, because 4, you know, not many people can accommodate 4 children in one go, we were likely to be split up. And so these were conversations that my mum were having with us when we were like 10, 11, 12, 13. And my mum made a promise that she would see us all through to adulthood. And my mum passed a week before my youngest sister turned 18. So she was a real warrior. So when I think of my mum, I've never, ever, ever thought, obviously I feel sad about her not being with us, but I feel like the 23 years of her presence in my life was worth a lifetime. You know, I got all I needed from my mum in the time she was with us. You know, there was one moment where, I mean, it was crazy. My mum passed obviously in the pandemic, and these were the times where we were, I think it was every Thursday, if I remember correctly, at 8 p.m. we were doing the round of applause for the NHS. But it just so happened that the private ambulance who come to take my mum away, there's a word for that, I'm sure, but I can't remember it. So my mum was being wheeled out the front door, and no one else in the street knew what happened. No one else knew that mum passed. And suddenly when this happened, you're not thinking about anything else, you know, everything kind of goes a bit blurry. And suddenly everyone comes out their front door and starts applauding, you know, and obviously for the NHS. And so as mum's coming out the front door, being wheeled down the road to be put in the van, she was kind of sent off to a round of applause by all our neighbours who my mum was very close with. My mum was very community orientated. And I just can't explain to you how that made me feel in that moment. It was like a mixture of real sadness, but also real joy. I can't remember exactly where I was at in my head, but you could just see everyone coming out to clap, you know, looking at the neighbors trying to, you know, and then suddenly realizing what happened, and everyone was just in tears, realizing what happened. So I mean, yeah, I mean, when I think of my mum, it's a real sense of pride, joy, and I think of legacy. I think about how intent-filled and purposeful she was, but how delicate and gentle she was. And I try to extend that as I take steps forwards. And now that I have two children, there's a bit of Nancy, which is my mum's name, in all of us, I'd like to think. And, you know, I bring some of those things to the fore with my children, where I can.
It's so beautiful, that story of the clapping when your mum came out of the house for the last time. And yeah, wow, that must have just been incredible.
It was quite not funny, but I remember a joke being made amongst us siblings, you know, and the very nature in which my mum passed. The night before, I received this message from mum, maybe at like 2 in the morning. I was sleeping, so I didn't read it at the time, but it was just emojis, you know, butterflies, bees, flowers, you know. She knew where she was at, and when my sister found her in the morning, because I didn't live at home at that point. They found my mum's gas mask, or oxygen mask, sorry, flung across the room. And then mum coming out to everyone clapping. My mum was always someone who was quite in control. And even in her last moments, you know, she was in full control. And that really does fill me with a sense of pride that she was very dignified and very strong, even up until her last moments.
I'm guessing from what you said, Tayshan, about the conversations that your mum had with you all when you were younger, when she was first diagnosed, that death and dying was part of those conversations.
I guess from a very early age, and especially as the eldest, I was the one who mum would turn to and be a bit more raw with what was going on. My understanding of my mum's situation, I guess I became numb to those conversations because the medical professions, the professionals in my mum's life, the experts who would advise on how long mum had left, would always be wrong. You know, like whenever they gave her 3 months, you know, 3 months would pass and mum was still here. You know, 3 months, 2 months, 6 months, and that would kind of duck and dive as mum was on this journey of fighting her illness. And so I became numb to the idea of death, and it was never really that close to home. I mean, my grandmother had passed previously, but I was young, and so whilst mum's passing was expected, nothing can prepare you for that moment. But yeah, I mean, conversations with mum would be very open, very honest about, you know, what life might be like without mum there, and the realities of that, which forced me into a sense of, I guess, adulthood quite early. I always say that I kind of missed out on my teenage years, not just because of mum's illness, but there's a whole load of things that I'm sure unraveled and unfolded as a result of mum being ill, and very much so impacted my mental health. And I guess there was like a how do you say it? Like a father-like role that I felt a responsibility to fill in my family. And so I've always kind of held that space. Yeah, so having these conversations very early on, I think have guided me to having a bit better understanding of the universe. And that's how my mum posed it, is that, you know, this idea that we're all part of an ecosystem, we're all part of the universe, and these things give and take, you know, there's ripples and there's like energies, and all of these things complement and compete with each other, and they all work themselves out in the end. And so life and death go hand in hand. And, you know, I'm quite accepting and embracing in that sense, because I don't think there's a formula to life. And I guess I'm just ready for whatever comes.
I love how you talked about legacy as well earlier, and that kind of, so those values and things that were important to your mum, you take forward and your siblings take forward in some way, in your own way, and shape them for yourselves.
Yeah, I guess I very much put a lot of my core values and my ethos and my ideologies, and, you know, these things all stem from my mum. And one thing that my mum used to do as a single mum, 4 of us, you know, can imagine, it was chaos, you know, 99% of the time. And the 1% of the time we were probably sleeping. But my mum would use nature And I call it a distraction. I think that's probably undermining how my mom saw it. My mom would use nature to captivate our minds at moments of chaos, you know, like just to settle things down. So whether it was, you know, the sunset as we sat at the dining table and had dinner, and maybe things were getting rowdy at the dining table, my mom would just pause the room. She said, "Guys, hey, like, can you see all the colors in the sky? Can you name them?" And then there we were, you know, suddenly just like pausing and then looking at the sky and naming all the colors. And then birdsong. She used to have this love for birdsong and kind of ask, you know, "Can you hear the birds talking? Like, what do you think they're saying?" And then even in the street in Ladbroke Grove, you know, walking past trees, you know, to just admire and acknowledge nature in a way that I've come to learn as an adult, we just don't do, really. I mean, there was a curiosity and an awe that my mum had when it came to nature. And now I do the same things with my kids. You know, when I'm walking past a tree, you know, I guess I point out the beauty of it. Sunset, you know, I do something on social media called Nancy's Sunsets. So whenever I see a sunset that reminds me of mum, I'll capture it and I'll post it and I'll call it Nancy Sunset. So I think these are things that I definitely do extend forwards. And I'd argue that my love of nature stems from my mum. And so at time of need, when the Grenfell Tower fire happened, it was nature that came to my rescue. And I see that as an extension of my mum.
And is that kind of her pointing it out? You know, all those memories of your mum pointing the nature out and saying, "Look, you know, look what we're surrounded by. Look what we're living alongside. Don't walk down the street and walk past the tree and not see it. Notice it. And there's lots to get from it."
And I'd even go one step further. She would say that we are it. You know, we are nature. This is a reflection of us, you know, and embrace it and acknowledge it. Be present. Be in the moment. I guess there was two sides of my mum. One of them was that she was very good at trying to be in the moment and trying to, you know, she was very, very good at connection, you know, walking down Portobello Road to take 3 hours because she knew everyone and she would want to chat and chat and chat and chat, which now I've come to realize how important that is. You know, I walk down the road and I don't know some of these people, but they know me. They go, "Oh, you're Nancy's son, aren't you?" And then I would find out all these stories about mum growing up and living in this area. But then there was the other side of my mum where she was a real force for nature. She was a warrior. You wouldn't want to mess with her. She was really resilient. And, you know, I think that those two elements of my mum, these are things that you were always trying to balance. You know, these things are completely different ends of the spectrum. And I find myself kind of trying to balance that same, like, juxtaposition. I don't know. Like, trying to balance those two things in my life. You know, one of them is to be gentle and kind and nurturing, but equally I'm an activist and I'm here to make change. And I definitely see that will, that commitment, that's part of my mum's makeup too. So she was just a teacher in all ways possible.
Thank you for sharing a bit of Nancy's story. I wanted to ask Tayshan about your experience of grief and bereavement after your mum died, and if you could maybe talk a bit about that and maybe talk a bit about what helped.
I mean, I don't know if I've got the right answer for any of these things, and I still feel like I'm on a journey, and I question myself all the time because, yeah, okay, whilst immediately after my mum, I was distraught, and you could visibly see that it was evident to everyone, you know, this was something that had impacted me. I very quickly overcame that, in a sense that a week after mum passed, or a couple of weeks after mum passed, I launched Grow to Know into the world. And that would then become my outlet, my expression in many ways of the love for life that my mum had. And so I always kind of question myself, am I doing that to distract myself? Is there going to be a moment down the line where it all hits me in one go? Or is this actually genuinely my way of dealing with grief and bereavement? And I think it is. I think my way of expressing myself is creatively. That's always been my outlet. I've never dealt with death in this way before. I mean, so close to home. I mean, Grenfell Tower was another moment of mass loss, which was slightly different, but just as heavy.
Sorry to interrupt, but just to add context there. So the Grenfell Tower was in the community where you grew up and lived.
Yeah, I lived in a shadow of Grenfell Tower. That was that tower was of significance to me for many reasons. I lived just literally across the road to it. And there used to be a football pitch called Green Pitch just beneath the tower, which is where we used to play football. And a lot of my friends from Grenfell would come down. You know, I'd have like mischievous, you know, evenings at Grenfell Tower with my friends. And it would be a through route. And it was, you know, from my sister's window, a bedroom window, it looked out onto the tower. So, yeah. So, and that kind of then does also add into, I guess, the years, past few years that I've had, which feels quite relentless from Grenfell Tower in 2017 to mum's passing in 2020, pandemic, cost of living crisis, all these hurdles and challenges all conflated and overlapping. And only now in the last few months have I kind of felt like I'm putting my head above water a little bit. And, you know, I've really struggled, especially around Grenfell. That, you know, completely shifted my ambitions, my aspirations, my career, which is a minor thing in the grand scheme of what happened. But these are all things that I had to contend with. And then my mum's passing, just, I guess, these things just compiled. And I really did, and still do in ways, feel that weight on my shoulders. And I guess the hope that I hold on to is that of the future generations, that I can channel that energy in a way that creates positive change for those that are going to come after me, in the same way that my mum did with us. You know, as a single mother of four of us, she didn't have the capacity to change the world on a grander scale, although she always spoke about it, and she always spoke about these positive ideas around solutions. She was very solution driven. She was like, okay, well, you know, how are we going to solve that? You know, where are we going to go? She managed to do it with four of us in the household, and now I'm trying to do it with the world.
And she's doing it because, as you say, you're taking forward the teaching she gave you. And if we are all on with the nature, the tree on the street on Ladbroke Grove that you described, then she's doing this with you, isn't she? So if she said that she made change and fought for change when she was alive, she's still making change now via you and with you.
And this is it. Like, I'm not religious, but my standpoint is that she's with me in spirit, you know. And you know, all those teachings, all those memories, that there's a feeling, there's an energy where, you know, at times of need, you know, there, my mum is in spirit, kind of just poking and kicking me, you know, going, come on, you can do this. She used to say, yes, we can, you know, way before, as it was a Barack Obama, you would say that. But that was, I would say that Barack Obama probably stole her phrase. But that was her thing, right? She used to say, yes, we can. And that was actually the name of her fundraising. She would call them parties of life, where she would bring all her friends together, and it would be called the Yes, We Can party. And all our friends would rally to support her in her treatment and funding of treatment. So, yeah, my mum is with us in more ways than one. And I don't think that she needs to be with us in the physical to be with us, you know, in the spiritual and in the mental as well.
Today, one in four people don't get the end of life care they need. This March, donate and wear your daffodil for the Great Daffodil Appeal. For every Amrit to every Zoe, every nana, dad and mate, every loved one, whatever the illness. Help make sure everyone gets the same care and support they need, right to the end. Please give today. Visit mariecurie.org.uk/daffodil.
It sounds like after all of the losses you and the whole community faced after Grenfell, and also after your mum died, that gardening continues, it has been and continues to be something that is, am I right to use the word therapeutic?
Yeah, I think for me, and I call it nature access, because my experience of nature growing up was never gardening. It was never, let's go into a garden to do some gardening. It was very subconscious. I think capacity has a big part to play in that narrative. I see gardening as quite luxury at the moment, because you need time, you need space, you need resource. Whereas nature access, everyone should feel like they have access to nature. And in the very beginning, that's what it was, you know, that observing of your surroundings and your understanding of your landscape. There's beauty in that. You know, you may not have a garden, you may not even have a balcony, but the ability to observe beauty on your way to school, or observe beauty on your way to work, observe beauty on your way to your mate's house. You know, that's for me therapy in itself. That's a therapy session. You know, when you walk through a park, you know, again, that's not your garden, but it's our garden. And I think we need to start seeing space as opportunities to heal. And so, yeah, I'd say that nature is therapeutic, and wildlife is therapeutic, gardening is therapeutic, and has been my go-to. I kind of give football and gardening the same credit in that sense, that in the same way that I step over the line on a football pitch, I get the same feeling in different ways to that when I step in a garden. And it's quite funny because football is very fast paced and dynamic, but my mind's in a different realm. It's not here with us, it's elsewhere. And the same in the garden, but on the contrary, it slows me down. It gives me time to pause and be in the present. And so at the moment, I'm enjoying that balance of being in those zones, in those different spaces. So gardens have been, yeah, my healer. It's been my counselor, my therapy.
And that pausing and staying in the present bit, I think for anybody listening who's experiencing grief themselves now, that pausing and staying in the present bit can be really helpful, can't it, with those feelings of overwhelming anxiety or the future or what's next? Because that's when the mind's not helpful, and it's when it doesn't look after us and when it's not kind. So that pausing and trying to stay in the present and actually using nature for that. Yeah, great top tip.
Yeah, and I mean, we do it without even realizing. And I think if we realize it, we'll do it more, you know.
Practice it.
Yeah, exactly. If it becomes part of our culture and our lifestyle, and there are places in the world that integrate that into their lifestyle and their culture more and more. I mean, even in Japan, there's some really beautiful words that we don't even have, that don't even exist in our English language. And one of those that I really love, and one thing that I really love is language. I think language as the ability to heal and to change, and to, I guess, poetry and music, a heal is too. So I love the word, I don't want to say it wrong, but komarebi, which explains the phenomenon when light is kind of leaking through the trees. And we just don't have a word for that in English. In the English language, we don't have a word for that. But in, I think it's Japanese, there's a whole menu of words that we just don't have that explain the beauty of nature. And if that becomes part of our everyday language, if we can have words that explain the beauty and the phenomenon, I always say these words wrong, and the magic of nature, you know, we'll all just be a bit softer and a bit more gentle and a bit more kinder. You know, I'm not naive in thinking that everything needs to be fluffy and bouncy and full of color, but equally, that should just be part of our everyday experience. And at the moment, it's not, and not part of my everyday experience. And I guess that's what I'm really keen on trying to bring to the fore for everyone.
I'm going to look that word up after our conversation. Thank you for that. One of the aims of the podcast is to encourage conversations around death and dying and grief, so that people, you know, essentially, I suppose, feel less alone with it, because we know it can be an isolating time. And, you know, some people I've met through the course of my work, but also just with my own personal experiences of loss, you know, people don't know what to say to you. Sometimes people who, you know, like, you know, some people talk about people crossing the road when they walk down the street just because they don't know what to say. So I think there's something about just trying to normalize the conversation, you know, to say to people, well, let's have these conversations and let's talk about it, because there is joy in them as well as all of the sadness and pain as well. And there's learning and teaching, as you've been describing today, Tayshan, you know. And so we want to encourage them. Also, on a practical level, certainly through our work at Marie Curie, we have these conversations with people who are living with a terminal illness so they can plan for the future. But also, we just have them with anybody about saying, well, you know, have you planned for the future? Do those around you know what you want for your funeral? Do they know what you want for the care you might need should you require it at any point? And in that vein, can I ask, do you ever think about, or have you ever thought about, your own death and making some of those practical plans, for example, like writing a will?
If I'm being totally honest, no. And I mean, I think the way that my mum taught me to be is very, I mean, yeah, there's pragmatism in what I do, but equally, I'm quite in the moment. And I mean, I've actually just been diagnosed with ADHD, and I got that diagnosis last week, which it helps me make sense of why I haven't got those that long-term planning mentality. I'm very short-term in what I do, and I mean, just because of my experiences, I'm quite comfortable with the idea of death. I mean, I say that kind of touch wood, you know, with my health in order and in good shape. But equally, you know, I've come close to death, not personally, but around me. And I just believe it to be a part of the cycle of life. But yeah, at the same time, I think it's important that you look ahead to the future. I guess it probably, because I don't have much to my name, and neither did my mum. And when you think about it from a very practical standpoint, you know, maybe if I did have have assets, then this would be something I'd be thinking about more and more. But that's just not my situation. It's not my circumstance. Maybe one day it will be, who knows. But I've not really thought about death in that way. But I am really comfortable with having conversations around death and my experience of death. And what might be one day, I quite like the idea of me going into the ground and bringing new life into the world in other forms. And, you know, I can stand by that. I mean, I won't have a choice in that matter. That's inevitable. And so, yeah, I think that's quite magical in itself. And so for however many years or whatever time I have on this planet, I'd like to think that I'll create ripples of joy and positivity as an extension of my mum, but also, you know, in my own right as well. And hopefully that will then extend to my children and their children and far and wide. And then I'll be with my children in spirit when I'm not here. So it's cyclical. It's all a cycle.
And just on the will bit, just to say for yourself and for anybody listening that, you know, it's not about how much you've got in the bank, but you know that there are other things you can include in your will. So it's about what happens with what you have and what you want after your death. And particularly for anybody who's a parent, it's very important. And the reason why it's important is, you know, you touched on this earlier with some of the conversations and experiences you had in your childhood, but is to explicitly have down in writing, you know, who's going to have responsibility for your children and be the provider and the one who, you know, gives the love and care and what you want for them going forward. That stuff can go in the will as well in writing. Just to go back a little bit, you touched on this already, Tish, and I was going to ask, you spoke about your mum's legacy and then you talked about what you're taking forward in your own right. And I just wondered if you could tell me what your legacy will be.
I am of the thinking that I can't be the judge of that, really. I mean, I have an idea of how I'd like to impact people and impact the world. I see the world in a very artistic way, and that allows me to see the beauty in many different things and many different people. And, you know, I think that's the ethos that my mum handed down to me. But I'm learning as I go. You know, there's no telling what will happen tomorrow. And, you know, my legacy is very much in the hands of the universe. And I can only control what I'm doing right here, right now. So I definitely do see my work with Grow to Know as really important, really impactful and crucial in solving problems of the future. And again, you know, we are local, we are North Kensington, not-for-profit, we're embedded in community, but also we're thinking global. So as ambitious as that sounds, we also like to think that we can create messaging that will impact the world in a better way, even if it is on step by step, little by little. You know, we really do believe that we have the ability to change things. So yeah, I mean, I don't like to pin down what my legacy would be because I don't know. But equally, I'm going to put everything into it. I'm going to try my best to be my best. And again, I don't know what my best looks like. So every day as it comes, and I think joy is just at the heart of everything I try to do, without overlooking sad moments as well, you know, because that's also important. I think it's just being in tune with yourself and in tune with the universe. I think those two things are really important.
Thank you. Just before we finish, can I ask one last question? And that is how it's been for you today being on the Marie Curie couch and having these conversations.
I feel like this conversation has been super uplifting because I really enjoy speaking about my mum. I really enjoy kind of putting myself in those moments and also sharing that joy with other people. I feel like, and I have awareness that, you know, death is not always something that comes easily to people. In confronting it, in understanding it, and embracing it, I feel like I'm at a point where I'm all embracing and acknowledging, and, you know, that's just where I am. I'm really comfortable with that, with the idea of death, but equally I'm sensitive to the fact that some people might not be. But it's I mean, that's just how my mum saw it too, and maybe she was putting on a brave face for me. Maybe internally she was scared, you know, I'm sure she was. And but I think the way in which she left this world, again, it just fills me with pride. You know, that's all I feel for my mum, is like pride. She confronted death in the most beautiful way. And even though she's no longer with us, you know, that has been passed on, maybe by accident, who knows? But that's just my feeling. And having a conversation about it, I think it's helped take some weight off my shoulders for sure. Because this is not a conversation that you naturally have with people. I think it's something that, you know, you kind of have to delve deep and know someone quite well to get to this level of understanding and conversation. But actually going straight in at the deep end has been quite nice.
Hey, Sian, Hayden Smith, thank you so much for joining me on the Marie Curie couch today. Thank you for sharing some of your mum Nancy's story and for being so open and being so honest. It's been a joy.
No, thank you. I really appreciate you having me. And it's been a pleasure.
So that's all for this episode of On the Marie Curie Couch. We hope it's got you thinking about matters of life and death, and perhaps starting those conversations with your own friends and family. Marie Curie's here to help, from planning ahead to coping with bereavement. You can talk through any concerns you have around the end of life with our support line team, which also includes specially trained nurses. Call us on 0800 090 2309 or search Marie Curie online. This podcast is produced and edited by Marie Curie with support from Ultimate Content. The music featured is Time Lapse by Pan Oceanic. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do like and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and until next time, goodbye.